This is an Akarmu for UN News. A recent report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, warns that urgent climate action is needed if the world is to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. As world leaders are gathering in Katowice, Poland, for the 24th Conference of Parties, or COP24, to discuss how countries can achieve the goals of the Paris Climate Accord, the Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, has issued a warning about the widespread impacts of climate change on food production. This year, climate change has been one of the big triggers in the increase of hungry people, up to the scary figure of 821 million, said Alex Jones, FAO's Climate Division Director. Charlotte Lomas started by asking him what role agriculture can play in cutting emissions.
Well, the agriculture sector is huge, and a lot of people don't realize it. Our calculation is that agriculture accounts for 24% of all greenhouse gas emissions, which puts it in the second place behind energy and ahead of transport, which gets a lot more attention. Of course, I have to qualify that by saying that by agriculture, we intend the full agriculture, land use, forestry, fisheries sector. So it's quite broad. But it's huge. It's one quarter of the total.
And so what impacts are we already seeing climate change have on food production and agriculture sectors now?
Well, there are pretty widespread impacts, and this goes all across the world. What's been interesting this last summer was with the droughts, it's had a big impact on Northern Europe, which had never seen this before. And even though, of course, Northern Europe has some very good coping strategies, it's brought it a lot of attention. In bigger numbers, we know that the state of food insecurity this year highlighted the fact of climate change as being one of the big triggers in the increase in hungry people, up to the scary figure of 821 million. So it's showing up at the macro level in the data. It's showing up all over the world in increased occurrence of extreme weather events and in gradual events such as desertification in the Sahel. So it's pretty much all over the place we can see it.
And which regions and communities would you say are being hit hardest?
Well, obviously the ones that are hit hardest are the ones that have the least coping strategies, the least ability to deal with it. I mentioned Northern Europe. Obviously, they have very good strategies, government support, resilience, bank accounts. When we look at the opposite side, we look at Central Asia, we look at the Corridor Seco in Central America, we look at the Sahel. These are areas that have very few coping strategies and few resources to deal with it. So it's not just who is being hit the hardest, it's the impacts of that hit and how they have a capacity to deal with it.
And what impacts can we expect to see with a warming of more than 1.5 degrees Celsius?
You're referring, of course, to the IPCC report, which just came out. Well, consider that we're already living in a plus 1 degree centigrade report, and the forecasts are of a 1.5, and it'll be very hard even to stop at a 1.5. We know that. The report made it very clear. Once again, extreme weather events, gradual desertification, slight increased sea levels. The main thing that we're seeing is increased climate variability, difficulty in predictiveness, which for us in the agriculture sector is devastating. Other sectors are better able to adapt, but agriculture relies on the predictability of climate, and this is becoming harder and harder. Of course, when we project that onto a plus 2 degrees centigrade world, which, as you know, is the maximum target of the Paris Agreement, that's exponentially worse. And I do need to point out that we're actually on a trajectory for a plus 4 degrees centigrade world.
Which would be devastating.
Absolutely.
And as the global population grows, we're going to have to produce more food than ever before, and at the same time reduce the sector's greenhouse gas emissions. How do we do this? How exactly can we achieve that?
Well, I think it's entirely possible. We have the technology to do it. The question is finding the resources to make it possible. Our estimate in FAO is that we need to increase food production by almost 50% before 2050. Without bringing too much new land into production. And in fact, we probably have to set aside more land for carbon sinks in the form of forests or peatlands. So there's a lot of work there. Once again, we have all the technology necessary in terms of better water use, better land management, improved crop varieties, and improved agricultural practices. We need to mobilize the political will and the financial resources to make it happen.
And in terms of adaptation, how can we adapt our food systems to a warmer world? What can farmers do, for instance?
Well, let me comment something on that. It's not adapting to a warmer world. It's adapting to a continuously warming world. Even if we cap our emissions, what we call the top of the curve, and flatten it today, we will have about 100 years of increased warming due to that's how long it takes for carbon dioxide to deteriorate. So it's how do we build a system which is resilient and able to adapt continuously, not at a higher level, but at a continuously increasing level. Once again, I think a big picture of that is biodiversity. We need better gene pools and diversity to tap into for better breeding. We need the diversity for resilience. We need better cropping systems. We need better water use. There's a lot of slack in the system. Just to mention a figure that many people know well, almost one-third of all food is currently wasted or lost. Already by reducing that, we could eliminate world hunger. So the slack in the system is huge, and we come back once again to political will and resources to make it happen.
What would be the sort of easy, obvious way of reducing emissions quickly in the agricultural sectors?
The most obvious quick candidate is in livestock. Livestock value chains account for about half of all agricultural emissions, especially cattle. We currently have the technology to reduce that by one-third. Literally, we could do this tomorrow if the money is available, once again. So another quick win there is that these livestock emissions are largely methane. Methane is 21 times more powerful in terms of heat trapping than CO2, but it only has an atmospheric life of about 10 years. So if we could reduce methane, we could reduce very quickly in 10 years without waiting 100 years for CO2. So that's a quick win.
And while we're waiting for political will to take action, what can the rest of us do?
Well, everybody needs to look at their own consumption patterns and be conscientious about it. At the same time, there is a danger of tokenism. We need to mobilize the political will. It's not enough to change habits and maybe use a little tiny bit less air conditioning. We need radical change. So there are some habits, but we don't want to be complacent about that. We need to mobilize political will. There's no other way this can happen.
So what ambitions are on the table at COP24 this week, and what is FAO's role in it?
FAO has a very important role, largely thanks to the agreement that was made in the last COP around agriculture, something that had been missing from the Paris Agreement up till then, a major agreement to recognize agriculture as both a key contributor to greenhouse gases and possible solution to the problem. This is called the Coronavia Joint Work on Agriculture, and we are one of the principal facilitators for that. And especially southern nations look very much to FAO to act as their support, facilitator, technical advisor. So we've been holding workshops. We've been holding what's called the Talanoa Dialogue. There's a lot on the table. In fact, it's quite hectic.